Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Colts are a well-oiled machine offensively.
Gonzaga.
Back in familiar territory. The Zags make it 8 straight. Sweet 16.
So what is the significance of a last second shot on an 80 on a game that was 83-84-78 in the moment? Well, that last second shot was for the cover. 0.7 seconds. They rolled the ball up court. The kid from TCU took it, hoisted it, and hit it from 30 feet for the cover. And I did not watch it live, Denton, but I woke up with the television still on, I don't know, 1:30, and just did the thing where you rewind it to see what the final score was. But I rewound it all the way back to like a minute, so I fast-forwarded through the final minute, and when they fouled the guy and he made both free throws, I just turned it off, and I didn't watch the final play. But I saw it this morning and went nuts! Big win for TCU if you had him +4.5. I love my friend Scott Van Pelt as much as I love anybody in my life. We've been incredible friends for 30-plus years. And he's got probably one of the most watched segments of any kind of sportscast or sports show anywhere, Bad Beats. Most of you are familiar with it. But it's not always a bad beat. Sometimes it is one damn good win. And that's what we had last night with TCU. Good morning, everybody. The Terps are out, and they should be. They need some athleticism, but they had a really good year. But we'll go back and forth on that, I'm sure, at some point this morning. The rumors, they were a flying, Denton, on Saturday as it relates to the sale. I thought it was going down. I didn't hear anything from people that I usually hear from that have some credibility when it comes to this or have real insight and are what I would call or refer to as either friends or sources. I'm not actually a reporter, but I get information every once in a while. And I wasn't hearing anything from any of these people. But my God, I was getting one text message after another. Have you seen this? Is it over? Is it done? And it was right before, by the way, the Maryland-Alabama game was about to start on Saturday night, which I was fired up for. My favorite, if you weren't keeping up with what was going on Saturday, were you, Denton? Were you seeing what was going on Twitter?
Oh, I was all over it. Oh, yeah.
Look, I'm not going to sit here and pick anybody out, although I'm going to read one tweet. Let me just start by saying my position is what it's been based on the most recent things I have heard from people that I would call credible people. I think it's moving along. I think it's going to end sooner rather than later, him selling the team. And I think it's going to be the Josh Harris group. We'll see. I have no idea if ultimately that will be right. I trust the people that I've talked to that they know what they're talking about or knew what they were talking about in the moment. But there were tweets flying all night long Saturday about the imminent sale of the Washington Commanders to the Josh Harris group. And none of the people tweeting it, I'll be honest with you, had I ever heard of. You know, there were fan sites, there were people that I don't even know if they were fans. My favorite, though, was clearly tongue placed firmly in cheek, I believe, when at Josh Taylor FB tweeted out on Saturday night at 9.04 p.m., can confirm Jeff Bezos was at Dulles International Airport this afternoon. Sources say he met with Dan Snyder and company at Lido's in College Park. That's a good one. That's a real good one. Another friend of mine texted me and said, is it true that they're finalizing the deal at Maggiano's in Chevy Chase? I mean, I'm like, come on. Do you really think they'd be like at Maggiano's in Chevy Chase? Lido's in College Park is a better one. By the way, the Lido's in College Park is what we refer to as College Parkers, as the new Lido's. The original Lido's was on University Boulevard, just down the hill from the campus. That Lido's got moved to just behind or right off of Route 1, I don't know now, 10 years ago. Denton, how much time do you spend in College Park? Are you familiar with the Lido's locations?
Not at all.
Okay. Well, the Lido's was on University Boulevard. That's where it was started, I'm going to guess, in like the late 1950s or something like that. This is where Lefty would go after every game. This is where Morgan Wooten would go after every DeMatha game. It was a legendary pizza joint. You know, one of the first things that Marty Schottenheimer said when he got hired by Dan Snyder to take over the football operation for a whole 1 year, Marty Schottenheimer said, I can't wait to get back to this area and get some Lido's pizza. I remember that Lido's pizza from College Park when he was, I don't know, either coaching with somebody against Maryland or he was in College Park for some reason. And he loved himself some Lido's pie. Well, we all love Lido's pie around here. Anyway, can confirm Jeff Bezos was at Dulles. Sources say he met with Dan Snyder and company at Lido's in College Park. Can you imagine the look on the faces of the Lido's staff in College Park as Jeff Bezos, Dan Snyder, and company walked into Lido's? I have no idea where all of this was coming from on Saturday. I did not, and I reached out to every person that I would consider to be credible in the situation. And the only thing I got from anybody was, it's all quiet on the Josh Harris front. I got that from two different people who I trust. It's all quiet. And they suggested that all quiet could mean that something is certainly in the works. And again, I will stick with my, it's going to happen. It's going to happen sooner rather than later. By the way, the more, you know, I say sooner rather than later, as time passes, it becomes the later more than it becomes the sooner. But the sooner meaning, you know, sometime on or around the time of the league meetings, which are coming up here at the end of the month. Shortly thereafter, there could be some news at the league meetings. And I believe it's going to be Josh Harris, Mitch Rales, and that particular group that gets the team. But I don't really care ultimately who gets the team. I do care a little bit, but ultimately it is going to sell, I believe. And the piece of news from the weekend that I think was substantial was Ben Standing's report from yesterday on The Athletic, and Ben will be with us in his normal spot this morning at 8 a.m. He suggests and is reporting that Washington is holding off essentially the free agent contract, and this would also include Daron Payne's new deal, the original payments for a later date than typical. The Commanders have extended the payout dates by 2 months, according to multiple sources who have seen the executed contracts. Typically, what happens when you sign a deal with a team, Ben writes, the general practice among all 32 NFL teams has been to pay out at least a portion of the large signing bonus within 15 to 30 days of the transaction date. But this cycle, the Commanders have put in to these agreements with the free agents that they've signed that the payout date, it will be 2 months from execution date. So they are extending it out, and that date would, you know, for, let's just say, Deron Payne, which 1 week ago we were talking about the surprise of the Deron Payne contract, you'd be talking about the first payment being due May 12th, 2023. And that's what Ben writes. May 12th, 2023, according to people who have seen the contracts for defensive tackle Deron Payne and two recently signed free agents, is the payment of their is the due date of their first payment with respect to whatever the signing bonus was. In the case of Deron Payne, it was a $28 million signing bonus. Now, what we learned, by the way, from J.I. Hallseller, a good friend who is an NFL agent and a former salary cap analyst in the NFL, including for this team, is that that signing bonus money isn't always paid out in one lump sum. That the contracts, you know, will reflect some sort of payment schedule. So $28 million signing bonus could be $14 million now, and then $7 million next year, and $7 million in the third year. Or it could be spread out $7 million now, $7 million at the time of the first game in the first year of the contract, and then the other $14 million spread out over the next year to 2 years. So this is what we've been talking about for a while now, and that is that Washington would probably be less active in commitments of large amounts of money in free agency because they don't want to come out of pocket a lot of that money. Now, we were wrong on the escrow thing, which we went through last week in terms of the escrow timing and when money for guaranteed deals has to be put into escrow. There is a review date every January 31st, and then the money is due by March 31st. But for the Deron Payne contract and any contract signed this year, they won't be reviewed for escrow until January 31st of next year. Now, the and then J.I. did a great job of walking us through the actual extension of Terry McLaurin last year and said essentially what's guaranteed the rest of the way for anything other than injury, which is what needs to be put into escrow, is roughly $4 to $5 million as it relates to Terry's contract that was signed a year ago. But anyway, Ben was the one report this weekend that I'll go with and that I'll cite other than the Lito's report with Bezos and Snyder, and that is the team has extended out the initial payments of free agency deals by about 30 days. So extending it to 2 months for the due date for those initial payments. And obviously the thinking is Snyder's will have the team sold by May 12th, sometime in early May or before early May. Other than that, I can't tell you anything else about all of the different, you know, fan sites and just individuals that were letting stuff fly on Saturday that the sale was imminent and that Josh Harris was going to buy the team or that Jeff Bezos was going to buy the team and sign the deal at Lito's in College Park. We got a lot of tournament to get to. The NCAA tournament was outstanding over the weekend. Of course, the absolute stunner of all stunners came the form of a 16 over a 1. For the second time in NCAA tournament history. And the one that went down this time was one that is generating a hell of a lot of attention, even more so than Tony Bennett's loss to UMBC the year before he won the national championship. What Matt Painter's done in this tournament has generated a lot of attention for sure, and it's deserved. Doesn't mean, though, that he's a bad coach. We'll get to that. I had a guest on my podcast on Friday, and I'm going to play this interview. It's only about 10 or 11 minutes, something like that. But Zach Jackson, who covers the Browns for The Athletic, was outstanding talking about Jacoby Brissett. And we had Mary Kay Cabot on the show the day after they signed Brissett last week. And it's interesting, and you'll hear what Zach has to say. The assumption from people on the Cleveland beat that Jacoby Brissett signed in Washington to be the starter. They believe that he's going to ultimately be the starting quarterback. here in Washington. But great things said about him. Busy NFL couple of days as well. Couple of interesting deals. We're going to get to all of it starting next. You're listening to the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Get it out!
Yeah, it actually hit him in the elbow. He was up so high. Swing it over to the other end. Is it going to go? Yes!
Big change. It is. Big change. What poise. And then the pass.
Yeah, that was the Nance, Grant Hill, Bill Raftery crew on Saturday night. God, I was fired up for this one on Saturday night. I was at a day after St. Patrick's Day party that was a lot of fun, and then came home because I wanted to watch the game by myself or with anybody from my family that wanted to watch the game, and was fired up for that game before it tipped. It was a late Saturday night tip, 9. I don't think the game went off did at Denton until about 9:50, 9:55, something like that. And Maryland ended up losing to Alabama 73-51. The Big Ten, by the way, flopping big time in the tournament once again. They are down to Izzo, but Izzo owns March. Izzo and company yesterday knocking out one of my Final Four teams. In fact, my championship participant, Marquette. I had UCLA over Marquette in our pool, Denton. I had UCLA over Marquette. I do not have any teams left except for my champion, and you have all four of yours left, correct? Who are your four again?
I had Bama, Houston, Michigan State, and UCLA.
Wow. Yeah, you were on Michigan State. God, Tommy was too. I'm on Michigan State every year but this year, and here they are into another Sweet 16. I had Baylor, Marquette, Iowa, because remember the exercise that I went through produced Baylor, Marquette, Iowa, and Xavier, that the champion would come from that group. Xavier is still alive, so I do have that. And then I went ahead and picked UCLA to win the whole thing. But Maryland lost. By the way, congratulations to the Maryland women. They are off to the Sweet 16 after a win over Arizona yesterday. The men lost on Saturday night to Alabama, 73-51. I actually don't think that the score was necessarily reflective of the game. I'm not saying that it was a close game or that it would have been a close game. But Maryland's defense from the jump was outstanding. They were very good defensively all night against Alabama. Alabama ended up shooting 39.7% from the floor, 28.6% from behind the arc. And yet they still won by 22, which tells you how good and how loaded Alabama is. Brandon Miller was outstanding after a slow start in that game. He ended up with 19 points, but on 5 of 17 from the floor. And then I thought the player of the game for them was Javon Quinterly, who continues to be just a phenomenal player from Jersey. Kevin Willard recruited the hell out of him and knows him very well and had very nice things to say about him after the game. But Bama moves on. Maryland out again in the first weekend. But look, this was a first year for a head coach. Didn't have his players, had to go to the portal to round out a team. My opinion is this was a very good season in his debut season for Kevin Willard. I think he's a perfect cultural fit for the program and the fan base. I think he can coach his you-know-what off. And he got a team that was picked 10th before the season started. I mean, if you took all of the predictions from the preseason, picked anywhere from 5th to 11th in the league, pretty much. There were a lot of people that thought Maryland is an older team with players who had played in the tournament like Hart and like Scott, etc., would have a chance to be kind of a surprise team. In fact, Maryland was kind of a chic surprise pick by some of the Big Ten analysts before the season started. But the bottom line was Maryland had a season that really nobody, not many, saw coming. 22 wins, a Big Ten regular season that, ultimately they were a 7 seed in the Big Ten tournament, tied for that third or fourth spot, whatever it was. But they had a chance and had a 16-point lead in the final game of the year to end up as the 2 seed in the Big Ten tournament. But it was a really good season. The game on Saturday night, look, I'm not going to tell you that I think if Juju Reese doesn't get in foul trouble with what was an absolute abomination of a call of his second foul. I mean, in fact, Gene Steratore comes on and suggests the foul should have been on Brandon Miller. The two of them got tangled up. He was getting hooked and held, and they called the foul on him. They went to the review on it and kept the foul on him. And that was his second, and then Kevin put him back into the game at one point. He got his third, and ultimately, Julian Reese played 20 of the 40 minutes in the game, still led him in scoring with 14, but he was going to be a crucial part of Maryland's attack against Alabama, and he was completely taken out of the game, played 4 minutes in the first half, and that, I think, changed the complexion of the game for sure. Maryland would have been a much more competitive team on the scoreboard with respect to whatever the final score would have been had Julian Reese not been taken out of the game by the officials. I don't think Maryland would have won the game, okay? I'm not suggesting that. But they got off to a really good start. They were up 9-2 early in the game, and then all of a sudden Reese goes out, and it's a different game, even though it was 28-23 at halftime. It was 28-23 at halftime because Maryland's defense, as it's been pretty much all season long, with a couple of moments here and there where it wasn't as consistent, but it was the strength. It carried this team for much of the year, especially on the road. They didn't win a lot on the road, but they were competitive on the road with great defense. And they held an explosive Alabama team to 28 points in the first half, and they were down 5. I thought Denton at 44-35, and it seemed like the score was stuck on 44-35 in the second half. For at least 2 or 3 minutes. And I thought, if they can just knock down a three, just give me one three-pointer to get, to get the offense rolling, and they just couldn't. And from 44-35, it went to 52-35 over about a 3 or 4 minute period that followed, and it was a ball game. But I still thought at 44-35 with about 11 minutes with the defense Maryland was playing, that they were just, you know, one run, which they made several of those runs against West Virginia, away from being back in the game, but they could never generate enough offense against Alabama's athleticism and against Alabama's length and against Alabama's defense, which to me in many ways was the story of the game. Alabama's known for being super athletic, super long, super deep, and being able to really score. Alabama's defense was outstanding against Maryland. The length bothered Maryland. They passed on a lot of shots that they normally don't pass on because of the closing length of the defenders. It just never got comfortable. Their post-up games, whether it was with Hakeem or Dante, except for Julian, when he was in the game, he just wasn't in the game enough. There was just too much strength, too much length, too much size that bothered that portion of Maryland's kind of ISO game with the post-up game. And they just didn't, you know, they're not at Alabama's level, athletically or talent-wise. So the season ends. I thought one of the interesting things is Maryland was not a great three-point shooting team all season long. And despite the early portion of the schedule, where everybody was excited that Maryland was going to be a run-and-gun team, that they were going to be a team that tried to play up-tempo, they ended up being, you know, 340th out of 368 Division I teams in pace of play. Now, again, I've talked about this previously. That's the league they're in. You know, a lot of the Big Ten teams are way, way low and way near the bottom of the NCAA Division I statistical category of possessions per game. Maryland, after the win over West Virginia, was 340th out of 368 in possessions per game, you know, a.k.a. pace of play. They would have liked to, and I think Kevin Willard would prefer to play more up-tempo basketball, but really they ended up being a team that played slow, as did and as does the rest of the league. And, you know, I think that's the revelation for him. It's a different league than the Big East. And the Big East, by the way, still has three teams and a higher percentage of their teams than I think anybody else, right? Isn't it 60%? They had five. Big East had five, Denton. So three out of five into the Sweet 16 would be 60% of their teams. They're having a hell of a tournament. The Big Ten, total disaster, with one out of their eight into the Sweet 16. And, of course, it's a normal participant, and that being Izzo. But one of the things that surprised me about Maryland's loss is that even when they got down double digits, they just didn't shoot many threes. They were 1 for 8, and I think part of it was just the Alabama defense continued, and the closing size and length of their defenders just made it hard to even attempt three-pointers. And I thought Maryland had chances early in possessions, but you could tell they wanted to be patient. They wanted to slow the game down a little bit, and ultimately they missed a bunch of free throws in the game. But the season ends. But a great first season for Willard. But make no mistake, and I said this about Turgeon, every single year the season ended in the second round of the NCAA tournament. You know, they didn't move on from Mark and hire Kevin to do anything other than become what Alabama is. This team, this program, the league, in fact, you saw it with Purdue. You saw it a little bit with Indiana last night, getting hammered by Miami and ousted in that game. You saw it with Illinois, although Illinois's got more athletes than some of the teams in the Big Ten. But you got to get bigger, longer, and more athletic in your program and in your league, really. And it would be great if Maryland became the first team to be SEC athletic. These SEC schools, and it's driven by football, make no mistake about it. It's driven by football and the NIL money that they now have compared to other schools. Look at what the coaches get paid. Not that that's tied to NIL money, but the coaches get, I mean, you've got like five SEC coaches in the top 25 in the country in average salary. And they are getting players, and they have the athletes. And Maryland was out-athleted in a big-time way on Saturday night. The goal is to be Alabama, to be the two seed or the one seed again at some point down the road. And I can tell you, Willard's doing a phenomenal job recruiting. They've got a top 12 class, top 10 to 12 class coming in, and they will hit the portal hard. And then you still have the possibility of bringing back some of the players for a fifth COVID year. The fifth COVID year would be available, I believe, to Dante Scott, Hakeem Hart, and Jameer Young. Now remember, this is a game that's played between not only do the players want to come back, but does the program want them back? I can't imagine them not wanting these three players back, or certainly Jameer Young back. I would be very, very interested in Hakeem Hart coming back next year. But they should be, with their recruiting class and depending on what they retain coming back, Maryland should be an easy top 25 team preseason next year, and potentially higher than that depending on what they end up doing in the portal. Good season, really good season, excellent season for Kevin Willard. I love him. I love the cultural fit. I love the way they play, but they've got to get, and he will, I think he can do it over the next few years. Get his players in, and that's when you really start to judge him. You don't judge him after 1 year other than he overachieved and exceeded expectations in the first year. So that was well done for sure. Denton, hit the what do you got sounder.
All right.
What do you got?
So remember when West Virginia and Maryland played on Thursday? That was all the way back on Thursday, the first game of the first round of the tournament. And we shared with you that graphic that was put out there where there were 27 experts, so-called experts, you know, Jay Billis and Reese Davis and Seth Davis and John Fanta, who we've had on the show, and Seth Greenberg and Joe Lunardi and Matt Norlander and Jerry Palm and Pete Thamel and Andy Katz. And there was just one out of 27 that picked Maryland to beat West Virginia. And when they did beat West Virginia, Patrick Amelian, one of Maryland's key players this year off the bench, a couple of other players were speaking to this graphic that became kind of a social media phenomenon in the Maryland world of nobody picked us. And it really served as incentive and motivation for Maryland. I wouldn't be surprised if Kevin Willard held it up in a pregame saying, nobody's picking us. Well, as it turns out, this was not a fabricated graphic. The actual information was true. All of those people picked who they picked. But the people that were put into the graphic, the 27 people that were put into the graphic, were cherry-picked by Rudy Gersten. Rudy is a guy that's written for the Post. I've met Rudy a few times. Really good guy. Big Terps guy. But the strategy of putting this out there and having it go viral with the purpose of it ultimately incenting the Terps as, you know, us against the world was also done 2 years ago when Maryland, who was a 10 seed, also in one of those very kind of unexpected overachieving seasons when they beat four top 15 teams in the country, you know, ended up going on to the tournament in a year that was supposed to be a rebuilding year after the 2020 graduations of Jalen Stick-Smith and Anthony Cowan. They ended up going to the tournament. They won a game against UConn. I think, personally, it was as good a job as Turgeon did when he was here. The same graphic existed. There were 27 writers who all picked UConn in their first-round game against Maryland in 2021, and Jay Billis was the one that picked the Terps. Well, apparently what happened was that the mastermind behind this was College Park alum and avid Terps fan Rudy Gersten. He's the mastermind behind both of the graphics. He said, quote, "I'm always looking for ways to give my team that little extra edge. And I'm a super passionate fan. I'm not saying it's the reason we won the game, but it helps to have a little bit of extra motivation. And one of the biggest motivations in sports is the disrespect card." So he handpicked a select group of pundits who chose West Virginia, ignoring many others who picked Maryland. It's funny, we got back, I saw this back and forth and I jumped into it between Ian, our longtime caller, and Scott Van Pelt, where Ian's like, the reason that nobody picked Maryland is because Kevin Willard has never been to the Sweet 16, and he goes on and on about all these reasons and how bad they were away from home, when in fact they actually had a winning record on neutral floors. Talk about cherry-picking numbers. He cherry-picked the neutral floor record of the Big Ten tournament, where Maryland was 1-1 to throw it together with the road environment, and just ignored the fact that they had also won two early season games on neutral courts against Miami, who's in the Sweet 16, and St. Louis, who nearly made the tournament. And by the way, blew both of those teams out. But apparently there were plenty of people who picked Maryland against West Virginia, as of course you would think, which is why we brought it up. It seemed like such a crazy thing that an 8 versus a 9, by the way, Maryland was the 8, West Virginia was the 9, two teams that were almost identical in terms of resume, the point spread was 2, that you'd have 26 out of 27 experts picking one team in a matchup that's so tight. This wasn't a 1 versus a 16 or 2 versus a 15, which is why the reaction was so surprising. Like, my God, how does that happen with an 8 versus 9? Well, Ian had the whole thing figured out. The 26 out of 27 all, you know, knew that Kevin Willard had never been beyond the second round and how bad Maryland was as a neutral court team or a road team. Well, no, as it turns out, Rudy Gersten handpicked a bunch of the people that picked West Virginia, but he selected one credible guy to pick Maryland because he couldn't have it 27-0. 27-1 sounds better than 27-0. And so he said the key to this whole thing was picking the right expert to be pro-Terps. They need to have a high profile, lots of Twitter followers, where they can crow to their fan base about their superior analytical skills, which is exactly what both Billis and Katz did. Billis in 2021, when he was the only one to pick Maryland over UConn, and Andy Katz picking Maryland over West Virginia. Gersten says, Andy Katz owes me a beer. So yeah, Gersten, partly responsible for Maryland's win over West Virginia. Nice job. Great idea. He was asked, he said, well, what about doing it for the Alabama game? And he said, well, everyone actually really is picking Alabama against Maryland this time. That was interesting. Who knew? I didn't. Good job from Rudy. All right, we got other things to get to. There's a lot of football news. I want to get to the rest of the tournament and talk a little bit about Matt Painter and Purdue's loss to Fairleigh Dickinson, who, by the way, was a 15-point underdog to Florida Atlantic after upsetting Purdue. All right, more on the rest of the tournament, and then you're going to hear from Zach Jackson from the Athletic. He covers the Browns. He had some very interesting things to say about Jacoby Brissett. I want you to hear him. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980 and theteam980.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The lob, and that will do it. Do you believe it? For just the second time ever, a 16 beats a 1.
That was really still as we sit here on Monday morning after 16 second round games. That's still the story of the tournament so far. The second time it's happened, a number 16 beating a number 1. By the way, what it will do for that school at Fairleigh Dickinson in Teaneck, New Jersey, is it will generate unbelievable increases in funding to not only the athletic part of the university as a whole. It will increase admissions by 150 to 200%, which is exactly what's happened in places like UMBC and Florida Gulf Coast and Virginia Commonwealth back when they made the Final Four. Remember when Butler first started to be a program? George Mason, I saw somebody tweet this out after the Fairleigh Dickinson win. They had a 350% increase in admissions office inquiries and 150% increase in admissions. And by the way, a 54% increase in out-of-state applications. What sports does, and especially high-profile games, in the NCAA tournament in particular in March, because you don't get Fairleigh Dickinson's or George Mason's, you know, beating, getting to the NCAA Final Four. It's incredible what it does for these universities, and Fairleigh Dickinson will be the new one. They lost. They're out. They got beat by Florida Atlantic last night by 8. They didn't get beat by enough for my liking. More on that coming up here in a moment. But the story really was Purdue, but really more than anything else, Matt Painter. Matt Painter, everybody in the business, you talk to any college basketball coach about Matt Painter, and they'll say he's one of the best in our business. He's not only one of the best coaches, he's one of the best guys, etc., in the business. Matt Painter's teams in the NCAA tournament now, 15 appearances, 8 of them, all right, more than half of them, as a top 4 seed in the region, and he's been to 1 Elite 8. No Final Fours, 1 Elite 8. But much worse than that is now he's lost to a 16 seed, second program in history to have that happen. Virginia's off the hook. 15 seed last year. Now, that was in the Sweet 16, but still lost to a 15 seed as a 2 seed against St. Peter's. lost to a 13 seed in North Texas, lost to a 12 seed in Little Rock, lost to an 11 seed in VCU. I mean, it is truly one of the worst postseason coaching resumes we've seen. And so for people like me who have said over the years, Matt Painter's one of my favorite coaches. I love watching him coach. I love the stuff they run. I love the way they are prepared for every game. And he's got a phenomenal regular season record. I mean, Matt Painter and Tom Izzo are, you know, the two winningest coaches in the Big Ten. By the way, the third would be Mark Turgeon. I don't want to bring that up in terms of overall wins over the last, in terms of coaches that were here, you know, up until last year. But Matt Painter's record in the regular season is phenomenal. I mean, he does a great job coaching basketball until the games matter the most. This is a guy with a 64%, 635 winning percentage in the Big Ten alone, a 676 winning percentage overall. They've gone to the tournament basically every year since 2014-2015. Now, they were not going to go to the tournament. His worst team was actually the COVID season where they didn't go to the tournament. So you got to count that as a non-tournament season. They didn't have a chance to play the Big Ten tournament to get into it, but more likely than not, they weren't going to win the Big Ten tournament. So he's been to the tournament 8 out of the last 9 years and overall been to the tournament since becoming the Purdue head coach in 2005, 14 times. One Elite Eight. And look, it was a famous Elite Eight game. I mean, they had a chance and probably should have in many ways beaten Virginia. Had them on the ropes, dead to right. Carson Edwards went for 42, but they ended up losing that game. And Virginia ended up winning the national championship game. And we talked about Tony Bennett on Friday, the criticism of Tony Bennett. 3 first-round losses, including the loss to UMBC in his last 4 tournaments. Yeah, but he's got a national championship in between. And by the way, he's won like 70% of his games in the ACC and like 74% of his games overall. But you can't, I can't anyway, I can't sit here and stand on a chair and scream how good of a coach Matt Painter is, you know, when the results in the tournament have been what they've been. It's one thing to lose occasionally early to a team that isn't your caliber seed-wise. All right? That's, you know, Duke's lost in the first round before. Remember the loss to Lehigh? Remember the loss? Who else did they lose to? It was Lehigh that 1 year in the first round, right? Lehigh was the school. Didn't they lose to VCU also 1 year super early?
Did they lose to VCU? They lost to South Carolina when South Carolina was a 10.
Yeah, but was that in a first-round game?
I think that was a second-round game.
I think they've lost twice in the first round as a super high-seeded team. I'm going to look that up for me. Yeah. Lehigh was the year that they lost. They lost to Lehigh, like, I want to say in 2012, somewhere around there. That was a first-round game. But I think it happened one other time, DK. And I'm not talking about like the year that they that he didn't coach when he was ill. I thought it was VCU. I could be wrong. But anyway, he's also got, you know, whatever it is it 5 national championships? I kind of lost track.
You are correct. In 2007, they lost to number 11 VCU in round number 1.
Yeah. So it was VCU. Oh, it was all the way back in 2007.
Yeah.
What year did they lose to Lehigh?
Lehigh was 2012. That was my senior year of high school, so I remember that one.
Okay. They may have lost somebody else, though, in the first round. We're forgetting one. Anyway, there's a big difference. He's been to, you know, I don't know, 12, 13, 14 Final Fours, is it 5 or 6 national championships K's lost? I should probably have had his resume up in front of me. And Matt Painter's never won anything in March other than some Big Ten tournaments, which he has won. I felt awful for Purdue the the other night. And I know the entire country and basketball, you know, rooting audience, especially those that tune in this time of year, was all rooting. I mean, I was sitting there watching. My wife was going nuts. She was rooting for Fairleigh Dickinson. For me, by the way, there was a personal part of this. It was going to be a bad, bad moment for the Big Ten. Terrible moment for the Big Ten, Purdue losing that game. But I can't sit here and continue to say Matt Painter is a great coach when his teams don't win in March. Yeah, they were close, and maybe if they, you know, pull off that win against Virginia, but they didn't, maybe that would have been the national championship. But they didn't. And I think he is still an outstanding basketball coach, but to call him great and to call him one of the best in the game when he loses to double-digit seeds on the regular. And here's the thing the other night. The other night against Fairleigh Dickinson, he got out-coached. And this is, you know, sports talk radio host, you know, screaming you got out-coached. But I'm going to point out a couple of specific reasons rather than just leave it as he got out-coached. Number one, more than anything else, his team was tight as a drum. I mean, they had puckered up so tightly, they couldn't shoot the ball. Mason Gillis, who is an outstanding player for them, a 6'6", 6'7", forward who can really shoot it, all right, shot this year 45% from the floor overall and shot, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of 40% from behind the arc, has a great stroke. He had an air ball with about 6 minutes to go and then refused to shoot the ball again the rest of the way. Every time he got it, it was like a hot potato. He couldn't get rid of it fast enough. I mean, the one kid, Lawyer, was the guy that made some threes for them, one of their freshman guards, he and Braden Smith in the backcourt. Zach Edey, I don't think, choked. They fronted him. They played behind him. They shaded him with a third player. And it was, you know, people were saying, well, why didn't he get a touch? Or he only got one shot attempt down the stretch. Well, they had three people around him. You got to knock down some shots. And they couldn't knock down shots. They were 5 of 26 from behind the arc. And each of them, with the exception of Lawyers, looked tighter than the one that preceded it. Gillis just stopped shooting. His last three-point attempt was an air ball, and then he was frightened. So, number one, they choked, and the coach wasn't able to shake them out of that. And, you know, when you've lost to big seeds, it becomes part of your program identity. And when you're in a tight game, in a 116 game, you could see how tight they had become. Number two, the other team, Fairleigh Dickinson, and you could see it last night even against Florida Atlantic, who's actually pretty, you know, pretty good. They were super small, but super quick, especially on the perimeter. Purdue's guards could not stay in front of them. Hello, I know you don't like to play a zone, but you've got to go zone against that. You got to mix in some zone at least a little bit. When you're getting beat off the dribble consistently, even if you've got a big-time rim protector in Edey, you know, they are dribbling circles. They're penetrating, and then the penetration is getting the collapse, and then they're, you know, they got open looks. They made seven threes in the game. I mean, and by the way, the passing off of the penetration was excellent. How about trying some zone? And then the thing that was super frustrating is Purdue had 16 turnovers. And some of them were against pressure. When you got a 7'4" big guy, and basketball people that are listening understand this, and you're struggling with pressure, use the big guy to help you against pressure. Have him in the middle of the floor with his big arms up in the air against the next tallest player who's like 6'5". And throw it to him in the middle of the floor, have him pivot, and throw the ball up the floor, and you got 2-on-1. And you can attack the pressure. They never did that. Edey was all the way down court. He was sitting there waiting on the blocks or waiting to come out to set a high ball screen, and they were turning it over left and right against the pressure. I thought Matt Painter got out-coached. I thought he had a team that was too tight. That's on him. I thought that specific to defensively not being able to stay in front of Fairleigh Dickinson's perimeter players, you've got to think about playing zone. If you can't stay in front of the ball playing man-to-man, you got to figure something else out. And some zone mixed in would have been nice. They never tried it. And then them dealing with pressure all night long and not using a 7'4" outlet to throw the ball to, then, by the way, to attack off of, and instead he's all the way down the court, I thought was a major mistake. I thought the guy who talked really fast, the Fairleigh Dickinson coach, what's his name? Tobin? Is that his name?
Tobin Anderson, yeah.
Tobin Anderson, who, by the way, was such a great interview, but honestly, subtitles were required because he talked so fast, I couldn't understand anything he was saying. Did you watch the interviews with him, Denton?
I did. He had a motor mouth. He went pretty fast.
He went really fast. Loved him, though. Loved the story. It ended last night. Felt awful for Purdue, but it was on them, and it was on Matt Painter on Friday night. He's still a very good coach. I can't call him a great coach because this sport is all about 1 month, and I know that there is a journey to get there and a journey to be a one seed. You can't be a one seed over and over again, or be a one seed or a two seed or a three seed over and over again with teams, by the way, that aren't typically the best teams athletically or talent-wise, and be a bad coach. You know, those that are doing the Tony Bennett thing the day after, Matt Painter sucks. Well, you guys are morons. He doesn't suck. But it's hard to make the case now that he's a great coach because he can't win in March. He can't get it done, and he's losing to teams consistently that are better. And part of that is style. Part of that is the Big Ten. Part of that is what Tony Bennett's gone through stylistically. But I thought he got completely outcoached on Friday night. We'll get back to the tournament and talk about more of the games from the weekend. But up next, I want you to hear Zach Jackson from The Athletic. He covers the Browns. He was excellent on my podcast Friday talking about Jacoby Brissett. It's 10 to 12 minutes on Jacoby Brissett. It's pretty interesting. That's next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.